Hello, and welcome to the Modernizing Your Practice mini podcast series brought to you by CPA.com. CPA.com is the technology subsidiary of the AICPA and is tasked with helping bring the profession forward into the digital age through relevant learning opportunities and technology solutions. I am your host, Stephen Menges, product lead for Rivio Clearinghouse and part of the assurance services team at CPA.com. Our goal with this podcast series is to bring relevant and actionable insight around ways you can modernize your firm in the context of today's most common areas of liability and risk, including ethics violations and reputation risk. And this is for all public accounting firms. With me today is Ellen Goria, a CPA and the Associate Director, Global Professional Ethics, at the AICPA's Professional Ethics Division. She is also one of the hosts of the very informative Ethically Speaking podcast. Welcome to our podcast, Ellen.
Thank you, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Please tell our audience a little about your team, the hotline, and how the team supports the profession.
Sure. The Professional Ethics Division wears many hats. We have technical staff available to assist with understanding your ethical responsibilities under the code. We do this through our confidential ethics hotline, where you can pose questions to the technical staff either via email or by speaking to a live technical manager through the phone. And through our toolkits and practice aids and publications that we prepare. And of course, through our podcast known as Ethically Speaking. The division also works very closely with the PEAK in its standard setting initiatives. And last but not least, the technical staff is also involved in enforcement activities. So the team is in a unique position to be involved directly with standard setting, interpreting those standards, and also enforcing them. If I may, I'd like to give a little plug to our hotline. The hotline can be reached via email at ethics@aicpa.org or through the main 800 number.
Okay, great. And that 800 number is that 888-777-7707, option 2 followed by option 3?
It is. You got it. Thank you, Steve.
I'm familiar with the hotline. Okay, so shameless plugs are fine on our podcast.
Okay, excellent. So
why don't you tell us a bit about the new independence standards issued by the PEAK related to technology?
Sure, Steve. Over the past few years, the PEAK has tackled four technology topics. The first topic explored was cloud services. This discussion resulted in no guidance being issued because PEAK believed it should be clear that the provision of non-attest services on a cloud-based platform shouldn't by itself change the permissibility of the service. The second topic explored was cybersecurity services. While the PEAK decided not to issue any authoritative guidance, the research and the understanding obtained through this exploration, combined with the inquiries on the hotline, resulted in staff actually issuing some FAQs on this topic.
Well, that's interesting. What is it that the staff thought would be helpful to communicate in these FAQ or frequently asked question documents?
Well, in essence, we concluded that independence would be impaired if the cybersecurity services involve the auditor designing, developing, or implementing clients' policies and procedures, or resulted in the member actually performing ongoing evaluations of the test client's controls as part of the test client's monitoring activities.
So what other topics has PEAK explored?
Another topic explored was hosting services. The work in this area resulted in the issuance of a new interpretation and some FAQs. And we've also followed up with some podcasts based upon some additional feedback we've received. We're continuing to work with members on implementation questions. And so I think it's possible there could be some additional FAQs that might be issued or perhaps, additional podcasts like this one. Before really get into kind of a deep dive of hosting services, I wanted to just mention the fourth topic that Peak has really spent quite a bit of time on. And this has to do with technology services that your clients might ask the firm or the member to assist them with. We refer to this as information system services interpretation. And this interpretation was adopted by the Peak back in May of 2019. It's basically a modernized approach to address these independence issues when you're helping your clients with various aspects of a technology-related process. It will be effective on January 1st, 2021, so we have a little bit of time. But at the same time, we are recommending that if you want, you can early implement the interpretation. So while this is or was the final fourth phase, I guess, of the technology initiative, it is by no way the last technology initiative. We just need to kind of rescope out what our next steps will be and repopulate the task force and keep going on from there. One more shameless plug, if I may.
Sure.
Gonna keep doing this. In December of 2019, there will be an article in the Journal of Accountancy that will take a deep dive into the information system services interpretation. So I would really, it's an excellent article. It was written by one of our task force members. And so I would encourage you all to take a look through that article and begin the discussions at your firms.
Okay. So information system services is the new one, and there's an article to look out for in the December Journal of Accountancy. So good. That's good to know. And it's good to know that folks have some time to get familiar with that until that one takes effect in January 1st, 2021. So overall, it sounds like Peak has really been busy in the technology space. And as you know, Ellen, the topic I was hoping to cover today with you was also hosting services. So it's a topic that I've been researching for a long time. And there is a lot of thorough guidance and content out there on the new hosting services interpretation, including episodes of your Ethically Speaking podcast, which are excellent, by the way. And we'll link to all of them in the show notes. So listeners have a thorough list of content and guidance around the hosting services interpretation.
That's great, Steve. Thank you so much. Very handy to have it all put in one place.
Okay, great. Thanks. So, Ellen, for the purposes of independence, what are hosting services that firms should not be providing to attest clients?
Well, you know, Steve, before I get into answering just that question, I'd really love to kind of give you an overall concept of what hosting services are. From the perspective of the independence standard itself, because I think folks all have different perceptions of what hosting services might be. And so to kind of level the playing field and make sure that the listeners all know exactly what we're trying to cover, I thought I would start with that. Would that be okay?
Sure.
All right. So I'm a visual person. So for those listening in, imagine a three-legged stool. And when you're thinking of hosting services, this three-legged stool will come in handy because in order for it not to topple over, you need all three legs. So if you were to provide a particular service that would get kind of scoped into our hosting services, you would remove one of those legs and the stool would topple over because your independence would be impaired. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind as we kind of go forward.
Okay. That's a really interesting way to think of it. So what are the three ways that you can provide hosting services?
Okay. So the first way, I guess you could lose a leg or impair your independence would be If you were to act as your test client's electronic security or backup service provider for its data or records.
Okay, so does that mean that the firm is acting as a business continuity or disaster recovery provider?
Exactly, that's a perfect example. Another way that you could lose a leg would be to be the sole host of one or many, for that matter, of your test client's information systems. And that would include not only a financial information system, but a non-financial information system.
Okay. So I get the financial information system, something like the general ledger. But what's an example of a non-financial information system?
Take a test client's website as an example. That would be a not potentially a non-financial information system.
Okay, I got it. So what is the third way you could lose your independence by providing hosting services?
Well, the final way you could lose a leg on your stool of independence would be to be the keeper of your, and this is a very technical term, so I don't want to lose your order or anything, be the keeper of your test client's stuff.
Stuff.
Yes, yeah, I know, very technical. The chair of our task force, I don't know, it always resonated with me when she used this term. Think of it this way. You've agreed to take responsibility to be the holder of their data or their records, meaning that if they need to access this stuff, they'd actually have to come to you to get it because they don't keep.
Okay, I get it. I'm actually an old data storage professional from my years before coming to CPA.com, and we hosted other companies' stuff all the time. We weren't a CPA firm though, so I guess we weren't at risk of losing a leg.
No, you are. No.
Okay, so despite all the guidance available, firms still have questions. So how about we start with some simple questions that firms can ask themselves to quickly get a read on whether they may have an issue.
That sounds good.
Okay. So the first question is kind of a two-part question that will eliminate some firms' concerns entirely. So let's start with, do you know for sure whether you're providing hosting services to any of your test clients?
All right, that's a good one. So firms can think about the three-legged independence stool. If none of the legs are removed, then they aren't providing hosting services and they're not affected by the new guidance. But if they answered yes, well, then independence stool topples over and you know where that leaves you. You shouldn't be doing the a test engagement and providing that non-attest service.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And not every firm provides hosting services to a test client, so obviously they're not affected at all. I guess the real challenge is when the answer to that question is, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'm providing hosting services.
Yes, exactly. There could also be some challenges if the firm answers that it doesn't provide hosting services without really considering that, you know, the three-legged independent stool, meaning that they're not really looking at the guidance to understand what hosting services are in the context of the code, where they're just relying on what they perceive to be considered hosting services.
Okay. Good point. In fact, where we find we're being asked lots of questions is in the area of portals. So I was hoping we could focus the remainder of the discussion on them.
Sure.
Okay. So when a member, meaning an AICPA member, uses portals to communicate with their attest clients, do you think a good question for these firms to ask themselves would be, does my portal act as the sole host or actual or de facto disaster recovery solution for any attest client's attest data or documents?
I think that could be a good question for folks that are using portals. Obviously, if the firm is engaged to be the sole host of the attest client's data or records or their disaster recovery solution, the answer is easy. Independence is impaired. So I really think what is key to your question is the whole notion or concept of acting as. One way to think of it could be whether or not there's a risk that your portal is being used to host the client's data or records, or being used at the client's disaster recovery solution. If the answer is yes or maybe, then wouldn't you want to take steps to make sure that your portal isn't doing that?
Okay. I guess a question we frequently get asked as well is, does using the Rivio Clearinghouse, which is one of our products, our platform, does that result in providing hosting services?
Well, my understanding is Rivio is a third-party subscription clearinghouse that's used to issue a test reports, right?
That's right. That's right. Rivio is a platform and document repository designed to facilitate secure source-validated document exchange between different types of users. Each user has their own user agreement with Rivio, including, you know, the firm as well as the client and even third parties who may receive it. And Rivio Clearinghouse is the actual host of the clearinghouse.
All right. So I think the two key points that you've identified is that the third-party provider is the host of this document repository, and that the client and the firm each have their own user agreement. So I really don't see how this would result in the CPA firm providing hosting services.
Okay, good. And that makes sense. So another question for portal users to consider would be, would any attest client have to come back to the firm and to the firm's portal to get documents that would be needed to provide to a new CPA firm because the client's records alone weren't complete enough in the case of switching to a different CPA firm. Is that correct?
Yes, that's a good test as to whether the firm providing hosting services via a firm or a third party's portal would need to make any changes to be in compliance.
Okay. All right. One more along those lines. A question they could ask is, if your firm must now terminate a client's access to data or records, are you prepared to complete the data or records purge within the mandated reasonable period after completion of the engagement?
Actually, Steve, this is one that the Peak Hotline team has gotten, especially the reasonable period portion of the question.
Okay. So, Ellen, what is a reasonable period?
Probably folks are not going to like this answer. I'm going to have to tell you there really isn't a set period of time. You're going to have to use your professional judgment. I know we have folks that really like black and white answers, but this is not one of them. What I can tell you is that listeners will likely find it very helpful to ask themselves some questions. One would be, is the period of time practical? In that it provides the client sufficient time to retrieve the information from within the portal while not causing the member undue hardship. And the other question that they likely will need to ask themselves in order to figure out if the period is reasonable is the period of time limited in duration and not extensive? If they answer yes to both questions, then the period of time is likely reasonable. Like one example, we can tell you we don't think it's reasonable to say the statute of limitations in your jurisdiction is appropriate, because many times that's like 7 years or something like that. That also is often similar to your firm's records retention policies and procedures, and we don't think that would be necessarily meet the sentiment of a reasonable period of time.
Okay, that makes sense to me, and I think it seems like kind of a common sense, like you said, personal judgment there.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So one area we get asked about by firms is how would the new guidance be enforced, and what's the best way to ensure that their peer review goes as smoothly as they're hoping?
All right, well, let's look at the peer review. I do think peer review is always interested in the non-attest services that audit firms are doing.
Okay. And, you know, after speaking to some colleagues about it, my question to firms would be, you know, do you have a quality control plan for independence role compliance in both peer review and non-peer review years. What do you think about that?
I think that's a perfect question to ask. And I really think the peer review team could probably make a whole lot more, provide more insight into what that might look like in the event that folks don't have that type of plan in place.
Okay. So I actually did check in with the peer review team, and they confirmed that peer review checklists do address independence of the reviewed firm at a high level, and that while examples of types of non-attest services are included, you know, it's not a complete list yet. They also reminded me that it would be wrong for a firm to conclude that a reviewer would not make inquiries about types of non-attest services that a firm has provided to a client. So I'm really glad I checked in with them.
Okay, yeah. No, I seem to recall that there was some line of questioning, but I honestly don't think that peer review is the only way that this could come up. I think there are definitely other ways the ethics division learns of potential non-compliance issues through our enforcement process. It can be from other regulators, can be from outside parties. There's really no limit to where we could potentially receive complaints, and you know, we have a whole enforcement process that would go through that.
No, that makes sense, and you know, this is you know, it makes sense that there would be enforcement via a couple different means. So, okay, Ellen. So, any final thoughts for firms before we wrap up this podcast?
I think just two that come to mind, Steve. First, I would want to remind the audience that the rapid technological changes that we're experiencing are why guidance like hosting services and the information system services interpretations are needed. You know, it's important to keep that in mind and not just, you know, refer back and think your memory of where the standards were is accurate. The other thing is the division plans to issue a strategy and work plan consultation paper soon. And one of the things that it will seek input on for standard setting is what should we be doing? And should it be standard setting? Should it be member enrichment? Should it be an enforcement project that we should undertake? So listeners that have ideas that they would like to share are encouraged to submit their thoughts. And if I can, one more plug for the hotline, you know, email us ethics@aicpa.org or call that main 800 number.
Okay, great. Well, you know, I'd really like to thank Ellen Goria for joining us today and helping firms as they innovate and digitally transform to better serve their clients. I'm thinking we'll want to have her and members of her team join us for future episodes to get their unique insights on other topics in our Modernizing Your Practice series. Okay, and then just a reminder that the show notes provide links to the guidance on this topic, as well as great additional content, including the AICPA Ethically Speaking podcast episodes on this topic, which feature Ellen and her team, including members of the Professional Ethics Executive Committee, better known as PEAK, and the Hotline team.
Wow, thank you, Steve. Really happy to join you today.
Okay, so we hope you gleaned some useful, actionable insights from today's podcast. I'm Stephen Menges with CPA.com, and I want to thank you all for listening in today. Until next time, I encourage you to check out CPA.com for more useful information that will help you and your firm win in the digital age. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond Disruption, brought to you by the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. Learn more about today's topic at AICPA-CIMA.com/disruption. This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.